Welcome to Culture, Talent, and Growth. Join Anish Shah and the Ruckus team as they invite dynamic leaders to share what they've learned about creating lasting culture, attracting great talent, and achieving sustainable growth. Let's get started.
Thanks for joining me today, Indra and Samira. Really appreciate you taking the time to kind of sit down with us and chat through some of these things. You know, and the focus for today is going to be on PMVCs and the future of funding diversity. Some of the questions that we have been kind of put together by our mailing list and some of the people here at Ruckus as well. So some of the things we'd love to hear insights from you too. First of all, let's get to introductions. I'm Paul from Ruckus. We're a recruitment firm. We partner with fast-growing startups, you know, anywhere from kind of seed stage through to sort of Series B, Series E, sometimes beyond. And yeah, really to help them hire senior level talent and executives. The company started in the US, partnered with a lot of startups in San Francisco and New York, other locations as well. And yeah, more recently, we've expanded into Europe. And that's really what I'm doing, kind of leading that charge in Europe, growing our community and working with clients based here in Europe. So yeah, that's basically me. And yeah, let's get to it. So yeah, Indra, if you want to quickly introduce yourself and yeah, maybe say a bit about kind of who you are and what you do.
Sure. So my name is Indra Sharma and I'm a partner at Peak. We're a European VC fund investing across Europe. We're specialized in three deals, which is DACH, Benelux and the Nordics. And I'm actually based in Stockholm. So I'm half Indian, half Colombian, born and raised in Sweden. And we're agnostic, so sector agnostic, we look at everything. I do tend to like consumer businesses and SME and dev tool companies quite a lot. But let's talk more about that later on in the presentation.
Awesome, great. And yeah, thanks so much for joining us today. And Samira.
Hi, I'm Samira. I'm one of the co-GPs of Pink Salt Ventures. We're the UK's first VC for female founders. We invest in female-led technology companies at pre-seed. And we're super excited about health tech, fintech, consumer more broadly, and future of work and education. And typically how we look at things are where founders are building for women end users or in women-led markets. And those would be health is a big one, education, of course, and there's obviously a lot of overlap between the two, but most of all, we get really excited about founders solving big problems for huge markets. I'm half Yemeni, half Irish. I grew up in Liverpool in the north of England, London-based. And before I was doing Pink Salt Ventures, I was a strategist, and then I was an entrepreneur in solar technology, built out digital sales channels for big corporates, and then started investing as an entrepreneur. I was looking at interesting spaces to build and saw really cool opportunities within women's health and sustainability, and thought, actually, if I just invest in women, they're building these businesses, and that's the best problem that I can solve.
Amazing. And yeah, thanks. Thanks for joining us today. So yeah, let's kind of get straight into it. First of all, I just wanted to focus a little bit on the kind of current landscape for European VCs. So what are some of the most promising sectors for investment and growth in Europe and kind of any reasons why?
So I think Europe is really strong on deep tech. I think that's been a big trend within the investment community for the past few years. Obviously, the previous few decades, it was a lot about social consumer opportunities, and there's a bit of a reorientation towards deep tech with the challenges that we're solving as a global community. And, you know, Europe has a lot of really good technical universities, and there's a lot of deep tech activity, but also health tech. I think that's going to be a huge vertical for the next decade. I think it was even one of the Andreessen partners was saying, you know, the next Google size business is going to be a health tech company. And we have an incredible pharmaceuticals industry, again, that like ties into the technical universities in producing really good researchers. So I think there are great opportunities on that side. And then more broadly within tech, interesting opportunities like generative AI. We're like seeing that come through to the creator economy, unbundling more broadly, and, you know, future of work tools that bring together single workflows that were distributed across different software platforms. Those to me are like a few really big ones.
I can add a little bit. I agree on, especially on the health tech part. I believe that there are industries such as health tech, such as fintech, where you just have an infrastructure that is so complicated and there's so much innovation needed. So I do believe that we're going to see large companies being built there. And also, we all know that mental illness is one of the biggest problems that we are facing in Europe and will face in Europe in the coming years. So I totally agree with that. I think that I'm, like, on a personal level, quite excited about a lot of things because we are sector agnostic and I do look at a lot of different things. One thing that I thought a lot about and that I am excited about is the way that we are interacting with each other, how we learn, how we work. And I think that it's you're seeing a shift in how new generations are learning, as an example. Where do they go to get insights? Where do they learn from each other? I think that you're seeing that. And those shifts are also being driven by other things, such as developers, as an example, being, you know, the new buyers. So they're actually the new B2B businesses are going to be facing a lot of developers. So I think that is interesting, since I also have a developer background. But I see opportunities everywhere, to be honest. And I think that that's the most interesting part, to see where we will see these big, huge companies being built. And I think it would be both in consumer, B2B, in several different verticals.
And yeah, thanks. Those some of those insights. Definitely sounds like there's some things on the horizon. And so how are European startups and VCs competing with other global players, or any kind of advantages or challenges that you see kind of specifically startups and VCs in Europe really facing when compared to kind of global players?
I think that there definitely it's a competitive market. I think that if you go back when I started working, it was much more local in many ways. Today, I mean, entrepreneurs are global. So they are networking and working across regions. It's not always that, you know, you're based in Stockholm, so you will get a Stockholm-based VC as your first investor. It might be a US-based fund. So it's a lot about that. Also, entrepreneurs, I believe, are getting smarter. They are learning from each other. There's a lot of knowledge in the market. So that also plays a big part. And we are, I mean, a VC is just so network driven. So I do believe that it's a very competitive market, of course, on the startup side, but also on the VC side. I do think that it's becoming common to co-invest together with other funds, and it can be across geos, across regions. You can bring in a fund that has a certain vertical focus or that you've connected with a partner at that fund and you think that they're very good to work with. So I think that competition, yes, but also a lot of collaboration.
Yeah, definitely. I would agree with that. I do think the US funds, though, to be fair, are coming in at a later stage. So we do pre-seed, and I do think there's still a lot of opportunity if you're a really high quality pre-seed investor, very early stage investor, to kind of cultivate those local networks and then collaborate. So I actually see it as an opportunity that the US funds have come in, because it just means there's more high quality VC capital available for entrepreneurs and therefore the businesses that you back. But I still think Europe in general is like, there is less capital. Like we're fundraising and capital moves more slowly in Europe. I just think, especially on the fundraising side, there isn't as developed an LP base for the asset class. That's been evolving a lot over the past decade. But, you know, it doesn't compare to the US, and it's different depending on the ecosystem, right? Like London, the Nordics, Germany, to an extent, their VC as an asset class has become a lot more well known. But, you know, I was on a call with a Spanish fund the other day, and there it's still very nascent. But then you take Europe versus like frontier emerging markets, Africa, and you know, the ecosystems are much more well developed. So, but there's a lot of really exciting, I mean, like, you know, Nigeria, Kenya, they're super exciting markets. Pakistan, India, India seems quite well developed now as well. So it's really thinking about on an ecosystem level, because they're not all one and the same.
Yeah, that definitely makes a lot of sense. And has been any complications on kind of regulation side of things for any of the kind of portfolio companies that you have, like particularly in kind of like health tech and things like that, like, you know, within Europe, like is that something that you kind of see is potentially more in Europe, like regulation, things like that?
I mean, so for the health tech companies that I've invested in, it's like if you're building a health tech company, you always want to be on the front foot of the regulator. It's the same with building I'm building a VC firm. It's like you just have to be on the front foot with the regulation, and actually it adds credibility, right? So I have like one mental health startup in my portfolio, and they have gone through the process to become a class one medical device. So it just gives them that stamp of approval. But of course, the go-to-market, if you're going B2B distribution, is a lot more thorny and complicated than just getting in BD sales reps and like revving up the pipeline. On the other hand, it's just like very difficult, you know, complex enterprise sales, right? If you like actually get the contract through, you then unlock a huge client base, speaking about the NHS specifically. So there is. And then, yes, of course, if you're going the health route, it's different across markets, but you can also go down the consumer route. So it kind of depends on the business model and the offering.
Makes a lot of sense. Great. And so in what ways have you seen investment activity and valuations change over the last few years? It's been an interesting few years.
Yeah, I think it has changed up and down, back and forward. It's when I started investing, I would still say it was a competitive landscape. I was doing Series A at that time at the larger fund. And I think that then COVID hit and we just got this extreme speed in the investment processes and very, very, a lot of capital in the market and very high valuation compared to what we have seen before. And now we are going back to a more, controlled funding environment. I do still believe that pre-seed is quite competitive. We still see US funds investing very, very early stage at quite high valuation still. But seed Series A and up, I would say, have calmed down a little bit. And I mean, the one thing that has happened is, of course, that funds have they've been careful. So they waited and see. So there just hasn't been that much action in the market as it was previously. Another thing is, of course, that if you raised capital a year and a half ago, and you know, in a year you grew 3x, then you might be at the same valuation as a year ago, because that's what happened to the market. It just went down. So those are my observations of what I see in the market. But I do believe that pre-seed and especially founders who have built businesses before, they still raise quite a lot of capital at quite high valuations. That's what I've seen.
Yeah, I don't have anything to add to that. I think that's pretty much spot on. I guess the other side is like from our perspective, we invest in female founders. There are less of like the FOMO-y, very frothy, very fast rounds, which like speaks to, we'll get onto that later in the discussion, but typically you don't see the same kind of extreme hype FOMO. So the valuations are more reasonable. But even in that segment, you know, we have seen, it's like the speed of getting deals done it's kind of normalized.
Yeah, it makes a lot of sense. And any advice that you've been giving to your portfolio companies, given kind of the current situation and how it may be more challenging to raise capital? Obviously, we hear a lot about like pushing towards, you know, profitability. I'm not sure how relevant that would be at like some of the earlier stage companies you work with, but yeah, I'd be curious of any kind of advice or kind of things you've been offering to your portfolio companies.
I'm of the view it's never a good idea to get the highest valuation as possible if you can't grow into it. But again, female fund, we see less of that, right? Of just getting the best valuation that you can just for the sake of it. And, you know, even founders who have run competitive round processes have still been very diligent about having a good valuation. That means the subsequent investors, it's going to look attractive to them and not like wildly overblown. The other side of this discussion of like, okay, now it's less about growth at all costs and it's more about profitability. I find that, you know, it doesn't sit well with me. Like always as a founder, if you're building a VC backable business, you should be across your runway and super, you're a business owner, right? So you need to grow as fast as you possibly can in the most resource efficient way. And I think given there's less capital in Europe in general, and then also within female founders, like the business, the founders that we invest in are like incredibly resourceful with what they have and generally don't just go, you know, balls to the walls and invest insane amounts in marketing that may or may not work. But I'm sure, you know, where people are investing much bigger amounts and they've got a bigger portfolio and, you know, we're just real like gritty pre-seed investors on the ground. We're entrepreneur operators ourselves. Mm-hmm. So that philosophy never changes no matter what part of the cycle we're in.
Awesome. Great. Okay. So yeah, I want to highlight a bit more about the role that diversity plays. What are some of the unique challenges faced by underrepresented entrepreneurs and what steps should or can VCs take to help address them?
The biases that you see in society are reflected in VC and in the tech ecosystem. So we have biases in daily life, all of us, and I think that those are reflected. And I think that a lot of our work is building trust, and especially very early stages, you invest in a person's potential and a potential timing of what they're building and the vision they have. And I actually spoke to another fund who are investing in also underrepresented founder, not only women, but also other minorities. And what they had seen is that when you start getting traction, then it's not as difficult for underrepresented founders to raise capital. But in the early stages, before you have most things in place, it is very difficult because you need somebody to bet on your potential. And I think that that is one of the biggest problems we have, that we just don't see potential in people who don't fit into a certain stereotype of an entrepreneur.
Yeah, 100%. I mean, I think, you know, so we focus on female founders specifically, but how you can break it down, it's like network and access. You know, when it's just you and a pitch deck, of course, that's why we do pre-seed investing, because we want to change the dynamics and get more high quality female founders into the pipeline. And this has just been proven out with our first portfolio. We'd have founders going out to market, pitching an idea, and they get the feedback, oh, this isn't VC backable. This doesn't make sense. And then, you know, they close their pre-seed round, started building product, and then went back out to market for the seed round. And it's like they got one of the top European seed funds on the cap table to lead the round. So I do completely agree that it's a different dynamic when there is a product there and when there is traction. But also there is a really interesting article in Harvard Business Review that came out. And it said that if female founders have been backed by female investors, other VCs assume that they only got the money because they were women. Whereas if female founders got money from male investors, it didn't make a difference. So it's that bias. It's like, it's hard for the founders, but also the VCs trying to make a change in the ecosystem and actually create the pipeline into the mainstream funds. We're also dealing with bias, right? So I think VCs, like if you actually care, you should engage with investors on the merit of their investments, and like also just be aware of your own potential biases. And it's like, what, you know, we're all investors. We're not doing charity here, right? We're here to make returns. And then the other very actionable step. So we work with Professor Donna Collins. She works at London Business School and has done a lot of research around this. And what she found is that how the bias manifests across male and female investors is when you have someone that looks outside of the norm, you will typically ask them more risk-related questions as opposed to more upside-related questions. So if you want to make a change and like check your bias, make sure when you're speaking to someone who may not look or sound like the typical founder, that you're giving them the opportunity to present their business in the best possible light. So ask a lot of upside-related questions. And I think that's really actionable. And then also cultivate your network into angel investors, angel communities who are backing diverse founders. It's like time and again, the argument has been that it's a pipeline issue. It's not a pipeline issue, right? It's a network issue. And VCs can take the time to cultivate those networks with either angels, dedicated funds. Like there's so much going on. So there's a lot of action that can be taken.
I agree so much with what you just said, Samir. I totally agree. And I think it's super important. And also the networking part, I mean, you could actually look at your calendar and see like who you're having lunch with, who you're having coffee with. And I mean, we reach out to founders on LinkedIn and different type of mediums, you know. So why not reach out to somebody else just to build your network? It doesn't have to be always a founder. It can be, you know, an operator at a company that just has an interesting background or is different from what you usually speak to, because that can also generate deal flow for you. So I think it's a lot our responsibility to make sure that we build the right network around us.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. And we've seen similar things on kind of the talent side of things. But, you know, that network and kind of, you know, building that network and being aware of it and kind of reducing biases as well in kind of companies' hiring processes as well is super important. Amazingly, yeah. Thanks for those insights. They were great. And you maybe touched a little bit on this in the previous question, but steps that VCs, you know, can take to ensure they're investing in a diverse range of startups, both in terms of the teams and the markets they serve. So any kind of additional things beyond like that networking and kind of proactively reaching out?
Yeah, I guess it depends how granular you want to go. In terms of, you know, on the ESG side, you can definitely build it into your diligence process and ask those questions. So, of course, ask around the opportunity and the market, but also, you know, what's your D&I practices? Like how do you create the talent pipeline, right? So to me, it's like how intentional you want to be about it. But I think LPs are also going to start asking for these things more and more. And there's actionable things that you can do in your diligence process, but also with your portfolio companies.
I can add to that as well. I think that one of the things that you have to do as a VC firm is to take accountability of who you're hiring. So that you actually build a diverse team as well of investors, next generation investors. I think that is really important as well. And of course, what Samira mentioned before is also like building your network, making sure that you include people in your network. Because it's so easy to talk to the same people and it's very comfortable talking to people who look exactly like you. And I think that, I mean, I don't want to brag, but I think that maybe Samira, you can also relate to this, is that, or maybe it's different for you, I don't know, but I think that I don't meet that many women that look like me. Like I'm now like doing this with you and it's not that often that I'm on panels, etc. Usually I'm the only one. Maybe it's different for you, but that's been my experience in VC. And I think that we need to create a more inclusive environment where people feel that they are not, like, I mean, you know, you can be different, but you are included.
Yeah. I mean, I think it depends what room, right? Like when we threw our party, it was just very mixed and lots of different people from all walks of life. And it's all about inclusivity at the end of the day, right? 100%. And then just like creates a good feeling. Like it's great to walk into a room where everyone's invited. And, you know, it's about the quality of your outlook and your output. And that's what matters.
How can VCs use their influence and resources to create positive change in the startup community and beyond?
So we touched on that a little bit of like cultivating your networks, you know, reaching out to different people. also getting in touch with people who are doing the kind of community work on the ground, the founder communities for diverse entrepreneurs, the angel investors who've like made it their mission, the early stage funds who've made it their mission and like build, do partnerships. Also, you know, there's the Women in Venture Capital conference led by Ruth and Sophia Anthemis, and, you know, support initiatives like that. And don't take the view of like, oh, well, now we're being excluded. It's like, in some ways, you do need to create communities and you need to create safe spaces because there are unique issues. But on top of that, it's about broader collaboration, right? And we're all building an ecosystem together. So I think like have a positive contribution to the dialogue and build, like if you don't know things, just have a conversation, you know, don't assume that it's like, oh, well, now you're building the women's club. It's like, we're all here to work together, you know, it's my view. You need like micro actions and you need to get organized, but then you also need to be integrated as a whole together.
Yeah. I also think it's about like moving also the responsibility to a larger group of people. So I think that as an example, because I wrote this book about diversity and inclusion. I get a lot of questions on this, no matter what I'm talking about. But I would say that many of my peers, they don't. And they are also like benefit into the stereotype in this business. So I would actually like to see more questions, not only to people who themselves are women or minorities, but actually to the ones who are the part of the majority. Ask them what their plan is, like ask them what they are doing as well. I think that the responsibility needs to be shared.
Yeah, definitely.
Yeah, absolutely. Really appreciate kind of all the amazing insights and information that you've shared with us that you'd like to, you know, maybe shine a light on that we haven't kind of discussed in the previous sections, whether that's, you know, any exciting companies that you're working with or just any, you know, other events or yeah, just anything you'd like to kind of talk about that we didn't get a chance to cover.
I mean, I can say thank you. I mean, I think that this was an exciting event, and meeting you, Paul, of course, and also you, Samira. We didn't know each other before, so I'm very happy about that you guys are, of course, doing this and also creating new relationships. So thank you so much, Paul and Samira.
Yeah, thank you. Thank you both. It's been a great discussion, and I hope it inspires some positive actions.
Thanks for tuning in to Culture, Talent, and Growth. If you found value in this conversation, please leave a review, subscribe, and share this episode with a friend. You can visit bringruckus.com for more ways to connect. And remember, new episodes come out on Tuesday.